This is Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading episode 30 of Here's How. I'm continuing with interviewing a speaker from each party in the lead up to the election. The People Before Profit Alliance was established by the Socialist Workers' Party and is now in a coalition with the Anti-Austerity Alliance, which was established by the Socialist Party. Got that? Well, now listen to one of their candidates.
Here's How is Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast. Make your view heard. Just dial 076 603 5060 and tell the world what you're thinking. Your voicemail may be included in the next podcast. You can find tips on recording your contribution and other ways to contact the show at hereshow.ie/call.
I'm joined now by Breed Smith, who is a long-time political activist with the Socialist Workers' Party. She's now a councillor on Dublin City Council for the People Before Profit Alliance. Breed, are you still in the Socialist Workers' Party?
I am.
All right. And so you're actually in two political parties?
Yes, I am, yeah.
All right, okay. And you are running for the Dáil as part of the People Before Profit / Anti-Austerity Alliance, is that correct?
Well, technically the name is the other way around. It's the Anti-Austerity / People Before Profit Alliance. Just that's, I mean, I know it's a combination of the two, but technically that's the way it is.
Can you understand that people are perhaps maybe getting a little bit lost in the alphabet soup of the various smaller left-wing parties? Isn't it important for you to give a clear message to the electorate?
Well, you're the first person that's said anything about being lost in the alphabet soup. Nobody says that to us on the doors. And I think one of the reasons is because all of us who are contesting on behalf of the Anti-Austerity Alliance People for Profit Coalition are activists in our areas, are, you know, engaged in the issues, are building the campaigns against the water charges, the housing campaigns and other campaigns on the ground. So we're known and we're seen to be activists, hands-on grassroots campaigners. And it makes absolute sense for us guys to be together to increase the potential and the strength of what we represent, i.e. the grassroots resistance in the communities to austerity and to attacks on our public services. So I think, you know, if I was to put the question back to you the other way around, we would get much more of a reaction of why we're not together rather than why we've got a lot of initials.
Okay, that's fair enough. Can I ask you, obviously you say that you're fighting against austerity and against water charges, against the property tax. Can you give me an idea of the more positive policies that you're pushing?
Yes, I can indeed. And I think one of the key things, and it goes under the radar all the time in political discussion, is the sort of rebalancing of the distribution of the wealth that we want to establish. And there's a lot of talk these days about taxes, whether your party should increase taxes or not increase them. We actually say, take the taxes from those who have the money. And effectively, that means taking 12.5% from corporations, not 3, 4, 5%, but 12.5% from corporations. Effectively, that means doing what they've done in many other countries in Europe and introducing what they call a Robin Hood tax, or otherwise known as the Tobin tax, which is a tiny percentage, I think it's 0.05% of a taxation on financial transactions.
So that's when banks are doing speculating on currencies.
Yeah, with financial
and so forth.
Transactions through the IFSC. Take a small tax from them. We reckon that would yield up to 800 million to a billion a year. The effect of a corporation tax and tax on wealth exiles, tax exiles, people who are earning a huge amount of money that don't pay an extra band at the top. So we're looking for tax changes and equality, but more about sharing the wealth rather than saying, oh, look, why would you pay for water? That's, you know, that's a silly tax. You shouldn't have to pay for that. It's not about naysayers are not in my backyard. We do have positive things to say. And we believe if, for example, we were to take those taxes and yield another four or five billion a year, all this talk about fiscal space that the ministers debate on is a bit nebulous because that entirely depends on what growth projections are in the economy, whereas our tax advocacy depends on redistribution of the wealth, and that's what we're arguing.
I understand that you're basing those figures on current economic activity. Are you sure that some of the multinationals who contribute to Ireland, who employ people and who contribute to the tax base, although in a very small way, are you sure that they wouldn't just up sticks and go to a more convenient tax location if you introduce those taxes?
Of course, I'm not sure of that. I'm not sure what the very greedy and the very avarice at the top of society will do. Nobody is. But what I am sure of is that they exist in other countries like Sweden, Germany, France, and they pay twice nearly as much of the corporation tax as we ask of them. Never mind the effective rate that we ask of them, 12%. In other countries, it's up to 23%. And they exist in those countries and they pay the corporation tax. What we're asking is that they pay the effective rate of the Irish corporation tax, which is much lower than the EU norm at 5.5%. And if they decide to say, well, F you two, and we're up in sticks and off, if they do that in those circumstances, then shame on them. But we can't be beholden to bullies who say, no, we're not paying you any taxes. We just want to exist and run all our profits through Dublin and exist here in Ireland and have lots of activity going on in Cork, where Apple employ thousands of people. And yes, the European Court are probably going to come out shortly after the election, nice and handy for NDK, etc., with a formation that Apple probably owe this country 17 to 19 billion euro. So, you know, the opposite to saying don't collect the effective rate because they might run away is allowing ourselves being bullied and being deprived of enough funding to deliver decent public services, which they have in other European countries where they collect these taxes. We don't have decent public services here in Ireland.
Breed, I actually agree with you. I think that there's a lot of tax uncollected, especially at the top of the system, that could be collected without harming the economy. And that's obviously a loss to the exchequer, and that means poorer public services. But that's not the only thing that causes that. And one of the things that we have in Ireland that, and you cited Germany and Sweden, one of the things that we have in Ireland is, I think, a culture and certainly a practice of very poor value for money, very poor work rates, very poor work practices in the public sector. And while you're probably right that there's a handful of billionaires who really need to be challenged, isn't there kind of a fat middle in there as well that needs to be challenged, but you're not challenging it because you're looking for votes from them?
No, it's not. I don't think that it's fair to say that we're not challenging it. In fact, I've got a strong record.
Let me give you an example. There was a study done under Brendan Howlin as part of the public sector reform of dozens and dozens, I think several hundred allowances paid to public sector workers and people getting allowances for doing things, for example, like changing the toner in the printer on their desk, whereby people in the private sector couldn't possibly imagine getting paid extra for doing that. Can you see that there's an injustice there?
Well, first of all, let me say to you, ask me one question, and when I was trying to answer it, you came in with another.
Go ahead and answer
so, that. Yeah. What I want to say to you about in relation to the question in me about ignoring the fat middle, there is a fat middle. I totally agree. I don't think it's the ordinary public sector worker that changes the toner on their desk, or the guy in the park who goes to lunch and has a lunch allowance if it's raining or something like that. I think, in fact, and I've witnessed it, that we're overloaded in the public sector with layers and layers and layers of unnecessary management. And I think this is particularly true of the HSE and other bodies that have been set up to deliver a service sort of indirectly from the government. You go to any aspect of the HSE, like I had to deal with Cherry Orchard Hospital for a couple of years there because they were winding down respite care for various groups of patients. The last one they wound down was respite care for people with HIV and AIDS. And in dealing with them, and it was a public, open, local campaign, we had not one, not two, but five layers of management to get through in terms of who we had to meet, who he was answerable to, who she was answerable to. And all of them, I could tell by the look of them, by the smell of their clothes, by the look of their shoes, their bags and their cars, were on big money. And there's absolutely no need for layers and layers of management. If I want to know how to run a hospital or a care unit or anything that delivers a direct service, I would go first to the cleaner, to the nurse, to the care worker, because they know exactly what's going on the ground. However, we are dealing with a system.
So just to elaborate on that, there are parties... on the centre and indeed on the right who are saying that there needs to be very radical reform of the way the public sector works. You'd actually agree with that?
Yes, but not in terms of cutting the allowances of ordinary workers. I think ordinary workers in the public sector are pinned to their collar because of the amount of money that's been cut from their pay. I know this to be a fact. There is a working poor out there, and most of them are employed by the public sector. I'm talking about cleaning out the public sector of the layers of management that are totally unnecessary.
Okay. Of course, to do any of those policies, you have to get into government. Am I correct to say that you've absolutely ruled out supporting either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael in any form of coalition or supplying them with a majority?
And you can add to that the Labour Party as well.
Okay. So those parties account for well over 50% of the vote in the polls. If somebody is considering voting for you and they want to have an impact on the way the next government operates, how do you connect those two threads?
Well, for us, it's all about policies. It's what people are prepared to deliver for, you know, the candidates that go forward and the politics they represent, whether they're independents, whether they're connected with the Right to Water movement, whether they're with Sinn Féin, whether they're with the Anti-Austerity Alliance or some other left formation. It's all about the policies that they stand for. And, you know, that's what we would have to look at. And nobody can predict before the election who's going to end up where. And I can guarantee you that the sort of shape throwing that Micheál Martin, Enda Kenny, Joan Burton, all of them go on with about who they won't do deals with, they'll all end up talking to each other after the fact, depending on the outcome. We will not talk to any of those three. We will look to those who will advocate policies which are close to or near ours.
Okay. But do you accept that before a vote is cast, the likelihood of you actually being part of the government is close to zero?
I think the likelihood of anybody at this stage being part of a government is weak enough. I mean, even Enda Kenny, if he was to win everything that he's predicted to win in the polls as they currently stand, does not form enough to have a government with Labour. He too is in trouble and is going to have to look elsewhere. Hence all the discussion about whether he's going to have to form a government with Michael Leary or not. So I do accept that we're up in a heap at the moment and that things are all for to play for. And this is why this election is so important, but it's also so interesting to see how the political landscape in this country is shifting. And I believe it'll have shifted forever. Because as a young woman growing up, all you ever got was Tweedledum or Tweedledee, Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, and a combination of them in coalition with somebody like Labour or the PDs or whomever. Mm-hmm. But I believe the political landscape is now shifting and you're seeing a real demarcation between right and left. Those who stick up for the public sector, those who continue to attack them, those who continue the status quo where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and those who want to shift that balance. So we're seeing a major, if you like, political revolution taking place. Nothing happens overnight. Even revolutions don't happen overnight. They happen over periods of time. And I think we're in a period of time where this is shifting.
I understand. If you look at paddypower.com, the shortest odds for the government combination after the election is actually Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Do you think that would lead to a political shift in Ireland where you'd have a more continental European left-right split?
Well, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know, in terms of the logic of who goes in with whom for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to go in together. I can't see them doing it, but I wouldn't rule it out. And yes, I do think it would mean politics in this country would look more like, you know, it does in Britain. You've got the Tories or you've got Labour. And I think that would, except I wouldn't compare at the moment, the leadership of the Labour Party in Britain with the leadership of the Labour Party here. However, I think that you're talking about shifting politics to the left and right, much more polarisation.
I want to just go back to basically, when I was growing up, I was always aware of the Socialist Workers' Party from demonstrations and from a very distinctive style of posters that you guys would put up with black and white block writing of slogans. I think it'd be fair to say that the Socialist Workers' Party has been consistently the most energetic and the most vigorous campaigners in Irish politics, and probably had an impact beyond their numbers. But I think some people are maybe just a little bit uneasy or unsure about exactly where they're coming from. Maybe that energy sometimes puts people off. Why is it that some people like yourself and Richard Boyd Barrett devote, you know, so much of your energy to a very difficult cause?
It is true. It's difficult, but nevertheless, I think when you get to philosophically and economically and politically understand what Karl Marx was trying to do and say in his analysis of how the system works, how it will not deliver, how to continue to go into a boom and slump. So in the course of that, it alters the fundamental nature of human beings to be able to relate to each other and to the planet in a healthy way when he speaks about alienation and how commodification can really hurt people's abilities to be in control of their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you grasp that philosophical content, you don't let go of it because it makes absolute sense. Certainly for me, when I started to understand Marx and Marxism as a tool for which to understand the world, it gave me a lot more clarity. And if you have clarity, it helps you to continue despite the difficulties, despite the hard hills you often have to climb, despite being in a tiny minority against a huge majority. But having clarity of thought can spur you on and help to keep you going. And that's not, that's not a dogmatism. That's an understanding. Now, having said that, I know and understand, and Marx indeed said this, that the vast majority of people don't have that clarity and that the ruling ideas of the world are the ideas of the ruling class. That the ruling class control the media, that they control the education system, and that the ideas that permeate people's lives are going to be the ideas that they want to dominate. But what's shifting is if you look, for example, and I hate, constantly referring to it in one way, but I love referring to it in another because it's been an amazing experience. The movement against the water charges has opened the eyes of so, so many people to the role of the media, the role of education, the fact that the likes of Dennis O'Brien, who was the guy who had the contracts for the metering vans, also controls 2/3 of the printed media in the country and much of the broadcast media as well, that monopoly of the people who rule on our ideas and on our systems isn't something that's peculiar to Breed Smith, Richard Boyd Barrett and Karl Marx's understanding. It's becoming much more widespread. And it's becoming more widespread through people's direct experience. So, I think it's just an interesting concept that people go through these things where they experience the notions that Marx talked about, the principles that he talked about. And when you see that happening, you realise, well, people might think I'm mad, but actually they don't. And that's why I'm doing well at the bookies at the moment to win a seat, because I make much more sense to people than, maybe the punters and the commentators think.
Well, if you were to go past the bookies and say in one sentence directly to the voters in Dublin South Central why they should vote for you, what would that be?
I think they should vote for me because they can believe in me, they can trust in me, and I've been consistently there for them and with them, and we are going through a political revolution. They need to be part of it. But this is the beginning of radical change, fundamental change in Ireland forever. And we all need to be part of that.
Breed Smith, the People Before Profit candidate in Dublin South Central, also a councillor on Dublin City Council. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks very much.
Make your view heard. Record your own contribution and email it to podcast@hereshow.ie. You can find tips on how to record a good contribution and other ways to contact the podcast at hereshow.ie/call.
And that's almost the end of episode 30 of Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, published on the 11th of February, 2016. I'm doing an interview with a spokesperson from each party in the run-up to the election, but I'll be back to covering other topics soon enough. If you can think of a topic, whether it's about the election or not, or if you want to suggest someone to include, and that could be yourself, then let me know. If you like the podcast, please go on iTunes and give it a rating or even write a nice review. Also, please like the show on Facebook. Please follow @HeresHowPodcast on Twitter. And of course, subscribe to the show. You can use iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or any other podcast app or software. And you can do all of that or get in touch with the show right from www.hereshow.ie. Or if somebody canvasses you, you can tell them how great the podcast is. The next show will be uploaded shortly. The Here's How podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. Thank you for listening.